This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 3rd, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We will resume our open meeting for today. Our next item on our agenda is the Audit Dividend Recommendation Memorandum on the Kansas Republican Party. And just a scheduling note before we get into the substance of this matter. For scheduling reasons, we will need to conclude this meeting at noon today. So we may not be able to complete this matter in that amount of time, but we will begin the discussion. And if we need to, we'll then hold it over for any voting or resolution to the next meeting. So that's how we're going to proceed. So we will hear from Mr. Bonowitz of the Audit Division.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Before you is the draft final audit report of the Audit Division on the Kansas Republican Party. The audit covered the 2007-2008 election cycle and resulted in the following findings. Finding one is misstatement of financial activity. A comparison of the committee's reported figures to bank records revealed a misstatement of receipts, disbursements, and ending cash on hand for both 2007 and 2008. In response to the interim report recommendation, the committee amended its reports to materially correct the misstatements. Finding two, receipt of apparent prohibited contributions. The audit staff identified contributions totaling about $52,000, which appeared to be from prohibited sources. In response to the interim audit report, the committee transferred $15,000 to its non-federal account, and for the remaining $37,498 listed it as a debt owed to the non-federal account. Finding three, payment of federal activity out of non-federal accounts. The committee appeared to have improperly made payments totaling about $105,000 from its non-federal accounts for federal expenses. In response to the interim audit report recommendation, the committee amended its reports to disclose these disbursements. We're prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we get into the substance of the findings, I just wanted to say that I think this audit was really a great example of how an audit can be used in a very productive way by a committee. And kudos to the committee. They had new leadership that came in and realized that in the past things weren't done as well as they could have been done and really made a commitment to do it better and to put the resources into getting their act together and took advantage of the auditor's presence to help them in that process. So nobody enjoys being audited, but they really seem to have made the most out of the expertise that was available to them and worked very cooperatively with our auditors. We got a nice letter from them saying, you know, how professional and courteous the auditors were. Thanks, guys. That's always nice to see. I'm sure you guys are always professional and courteous, but, you know, people aren't moved to write that letter too often, so that's great. And I just think this is really... kudos go all around to the committee and to the auditors for working together so well and so productively in order to help this committee get its house in order.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Mr. Bonowitz relating to the convention pins, the 1,600 and change for the convention pins and the 14,000 and change for the printed materials. When... as you note in footnote 3, that the audit staff is unable to verify the purchase of the pins was in close proximity to the convention and other payments made to that vendor were for convention gifts. You mentioned that we just don't have any information. What kind of walk me through why they weren't able to provide information? And it sounds like, do they even have a clue as to what was either on the pins or on those printed materials?
When we began the field work, a lot of records were not available with respect to the non-federal account. And the committee people working there at the time were all gone. They made a lot of efforts to get
so the people you're working with are not the same people who were on board.
Correct.
When all this was going on, when the pins were being made, when the printed materials were being sent out.
Correct. And they did try to contact some of the former employees of the party to try to get the information. They We work with them, and they work with us to try to resolve a lot of these issues. The remaining items, basically all we had was the bank statement, a copy of the bank statement for the federal, non-federal accounts, which also contained copies of the canceled checks.
Okay. The thing that when I was reading through about these particular issues in general is, and this comes up in other audits, what do you do when there's an expense from a non-federal account and there's not information that's available to verify that it was eligible to be paid with all non-federal dollars, or whether or not there may have been some federal component, or maybe it should have been all paid with federal. I mean, what do you do? The default in some audits is to say, well, we will presume that it was a federal expense and that it should have been paid for out of the federal account, which in some circumstances, that to me at least, I don't know what about my other colleagues, that's not a very satisfactory answer, because we just don't, you know, if in these jump ball situations we always default to saying it should have been paid for out of the federal account, that's not particularly satisfactory. I'm sympathetic also to the counter claim that you also can't always say that, well, lack of documentation equals get out of jail free, and that we'll always presume that it was an eligible expense. I'm not sure how to resolve those two things in all instances. In this particular one, you know, we kind of have the unique situation where the people who were actually on the ground during the time that, again, the pins and the materials were being sent out were not the same people that you were dealing with during the audit, which really created some hardships for them. And maybe, you know, I don't know what the rule is on these jump ball situations in all instances, but maybe in this one, this would be a case, if there are any cases, for saying that maybe this is one where we kind of take the approach we did in Tennessee Democratic Party and say that we just don't have enough information to know one way or the other. I just wanted to flag that as an issue because it's one that does come up, and it's not one that, again, I'm not sure what the satisfactory answer, but I know that at least for me, it's not satisfactory to always default to that we'll presume that it was a federal expense, and I'm sure that this has been an issue that predated me, and I'm sure that's one that you've all grappled with as well, but I'll flag it once again.
I will note that not having the people who worked on it available when we do the audit is not a unique situation. In fact, particularly with state party committees, I think it's probably at least as common as having those people available. The convention pins, you know, they did at least give us a spreadsheet that said they guessed that's what it was. But they don't really know for sure either, but that was their best guess.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share my colleague's frustration. You know, part of the problem is that if we say, well, if we don't have the papers, then we assume that they did it right, then we create a very perverse incentive for everybody to shred every paper in sight anymore. I think what we've tried to do to try and be accommodating to folks who are, you know, often run by volunteers and sometimes they have turnover every single cycle and a little disorganized is to say, you know, is there somebody who can file an affidavit? You know, we've accepted affidavits. We've tried, I think, to accommodate, you know, the real world where people don't always have perfect records, and we have to do something with that. And it is one of the frustrating aspects of this, although Joe's right, it's not unique, where we don't have any of that. We don't have the people who could even come in and say, we remember how this worked and this is how we did it. In fact, what we have is sort of a cleaning house operation where they say, well, we don't know what happened before, but we're pretty sure they didn't do everything they were supposed to because we don't have any of the records. So, you know, where we go from there, what conclusions we should draw from there, I think is, you're right, it's frustrating and it's difficult, and I'm not really sure where we where that takes us in terms of the findings.
Commissioner Peterson.
If I could just ask one quick follow-up on as Commissioner Weintraub pointed out, sometimes we do give the option of affidavits. Did they, in this case, just did they just say that, you know, in light of the amounts that were at issue here and maybe some of the hassle that it would take to maybe track down one of the, you know, one of the delegates who might have known what the pen was and to get them to reduce something to an affidavit, we'll just make the amendments. How did that all go down?
They did make efforts to follow up and get some of this information, but in their response to the interim, they did cite that in view of the scant records, they chose just to file amendments. But we know they were actively, through our conversations with them, we know they were actively trying to locate the information as best they could.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. And that's really the problem. We can't make a finding one way or another, and that's what gets tough. And then what do we do? We've had audits. There's one soon after I got to the commission, which was Missouri Dems. They had a bunch of advertising, and you know, they had all sorts of paperwork trying to document, but that wasn't enough proof. That's one kind of case. And here we have, you know, $1,600 in change for convention pins, and no one has an actual pin, so we don't know what the pin said. But to me, it's the same. It's the same problem of what do we do? Fortunately here, or unfortunately for them, they've done amendments and they're showing it as all federal. So in a way, it moots it out. But I think the concern, at least on this point, and there's a larger concern in another part of the audit report, but on this issue, the concern is that this doesn't become a new rule going forward, that we're going to go back to presuming everything is federal, unless they affirmatively prove otherwise. So there, it may be simple editing of the final report just to make clear that they did make amendments showing it was federal, and you know, we don't necessarily have to put the icing on the cake that says, you know, it appears they should have paid it from a federal account, because we really can't say that. There really isn't evidence that they should have, but there isn't evidence that they shouldn't have, and I don't think we can presume everything is federal unless they prove otherwise. So I think that's a writing job that, as Commissioner Peterson alluded to, we did in another recent audit where simply, you know, we note it, and here they did make an amendment. So for this particular committee, it's not going to matter, right? But it matters for the next committee or the next audit or what we do going forward. I also want to echo Commissioner Weintraub's statements about this committee. This it seems like they've made an investment in moving forward and getting the reports right, something that is rather new here. It actually predates me. John Gibson had actually tried it out when he was here, is actually having the analysts from the reports analysis division, who's on the committee, on the committee's file, so to speak, actually participate in the audit and work with the committee to get the amendments done. I think it's a great use of commission resources, and I think this case shows why it helps, because If you have a problem where your infrastructure of your committee is completely turned over, and you know, we all read the newspapers, you know, this committee in particular had some sea changes, leadership and whatnot. What the auditors do is find the issues, but then the committee has to figure out how to do the amendments, and sometimes that could be a lot more work than actually going through the audit. So I think it's very helpful that they actually are able to get the full package in the audit and then move forward. But like Commissioner Weintraub, I think this is an example of when you have a problem, sometimes it's better to do the best you can, come in and say we want to get healthy. And it's something that we agree is something that we look to for future, whatever the future may hold for a particular committee. I think it's important. Now, you know, if you actually want to fight something, you obviously can do that. But when you know you're messed up, it's best to just fess up. So with that, I'll yield back, and Commissioner Hunter seems poised here, so I'll yield because we have until noon. Yes.
Mr. Hunter.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk briefly about the national convention costs and findings 2 and 3, and to make a point also in the OGC's memo dated August 5th that states that the committee agrees with the findings of the audit report. Now, I think that's a little bit of an overstatement. It reads as if the committee agreed that the convention expenses should have been paid with all hard dollars, and they don't specifically agree to that. I think the letter says something along the lines of, we agree with most of the commission's findings. We're not even really sure what they're agreeing with. And the other thing I'd like to talk about is in a little bit more detail about the regulations regarding expenses for the delegates to go to the convention. My reading of the relevant regulations, 110.14E1 and 110.14H1, both of those regulations are referring to the expenditures for the cost for the delegate selection process. And in both of those regulations, it's listed, specifically says, such expenditures may include but are not limited to payments for travel and subsistence during the delegate selection process, including the National Nominating Convention. So that seems to me that the only time that the expenses would be considered expenditures is if you were going to the National Convention to be elected or selected a delegate. It says such expenditures may include but are not limited to payments for travel and subsistence during the delegate selection process, including the National Nominating Convention. I don't know when these regulations were written, but as far as I know, the delegates are already selected prior to the convention, except there is a circumstance where I believe both parties, and I know the Republican Party has a contests committee. So there are circumstances, and I believe last time there were three states that had contests filed against certain of their delegates. So the call to the convention couldn't even be printed until those contests had been resolved at the actual convention. So I think you could argue that the expenses for those people who aren't officially on the call to the convention, those probably are should be considered expenditures. But I don't know how you argue that anybody else who's already been selected a delegate, you know, their flight to Minneapolis or Charlotte or wherever should be considered an expenditure. I don't think the regs read that way at all.
Counselor, did you want to respond?
Sure. Well, I think our reading was a little broader than that. And I think that was largely based on the Puerto Rico advisory opinion, which didn't seem to make that distinction. It seemed to just state that broadly, it read those regulations as meaning broadly sending a delegate to the convention would be considered for the purposes of influencing a federal election and hence federal activity. In that case, an expenditure for purposes of determining whether the committee was in fact a political committee.
And that's why I was trying to stay away from the AO, because I think the reasoning is flawed, and I don't think it makes a lot of sense. And the sentence I believe you're referring to reads, the regulations include payments by a delegate or a delegate committee for the travel and subsistence of a delegate or delegates at the national convention as expenditures. And that sentence cites the same two regs I was just referring to. And so, in my view, the reg has been miscited in this AO.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Question of process. Do my colleagues believe that an audit is the appropriate context for overruling an AO?
Vice Chair Hunter.
This could be an interesting conversation. I wasn't really viewing it that way. I was more viewing it as, you know, to the extent that I think all of us, or at least some of us, believe that the AO is a shield. So that means that somebody can rely on this and the FEC can't come after them if they rely on an AO. It doesn't mean that one can use this AO against somebody in the future. So I don't view it as an audit overturning an AO.
And you believe there's a non-federal component to attending the national nominating conventions?
Yes, the regulations are, discuss the...
No, but I mean, like, big picture. What happens at the national nominating conventions? They don't pick people for state office. They pick the nominee for federal office.
Right, and the person is already selected before they get on the plane. So getting on the plane and going there generally has nothing to do with whether or not the expense of flying them to Charlotte has nothing to do with the purpose. To follow your reasoning, the entire convention should be federal. the entire convention, because everything that happens there, following your reason, is related to selecting the presidential candidate.
The delegates that go there, they don't go there to vote. They have the, when we call on the state of Arkansas, and the great state of Arkansas casts its votes for, is that for some other purpose?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. The regulations discuss the selection of the delegates, and the selection of the delegate does have a direct connection with choosing a federal candidate. But the cost to feed that person while they're at the convention has nothing to do with their vote for the presidential candidate. Yes, they go to the convention to elect obviously, yes. I mean, that, of course. And I'm not sure how that feeds into the regulations or to anything else.
Well, I guess what I would suggest is that when they said including the nominating conventions, the regulation isn't intended to mean including the nominated, including attendance at the nomination, at the nominating conventions. Not you're reading that regulation very, very narrowly. And I don't think that's the only way that the regulation can be read, and I think that it's not the most logical way that most people would understand it or have over the years.
Right? I mean, I don't think I'm reading it narrowly. It's, again, it just says including. I mean, there's nothing, it doesn't say the expenditures include going to the convention. It says may include but are not limited to payment for travel, blah, 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 during the delegate selection process, including. And the title, not that it's terribly relevant to this section, is the title of the regulation is expenditures by a delegate to advocate only his or her selection. All of the regulations, again, are about the delegate selection process, because, of course, that has a direct impact on how someone votes at the convention. If I say to you, please vote for me at this caucus, and if you vote for me, I will go to Minneapolis and vote for John McCain, then that obviously has some impact on the election of a federal official, candidate. You know what I'm saying? Right. But just the virtue of my getting on the plane to go there doesn't have anything to do with the delegate selection process.
But it's got a great deal to do with whether you are able to stand on the floor of the convention and raise your hand and say the great state of Arkansas votes for whoever. You need money to get there.
Yeah. Commissioner McGann?
If a delegate paid his or her own way, would that be an independent expenditure that had to be reported? No, right?
It would be an expenditure under the regulation on delegate expenses. It would not have to be reported, but
where is that, Larry?
Under the reading we're advancing, it's the same provision. Expenditures by a delegate that advocate only his or her selection are neither contributions to a candidate nor chargeable to the expenditure limits of any presidential candidate. I'm sorry, I'm at 110.14E.
But that's about the selection again.
Right. And that's the argument, is how do you read the clause Commissioner Hunter is talking about? To answer Commissioner McGann's question, the next paragraph, paragraph 2, says a delegate is not required to report expenditures made to advocate only his or her selection. If you read travel and subsistence as coming within that, despite the inartful drafting of it, then you also don't have to report your own travel and subsistence expenditures.
Right, and that's the if I... Not to just since we're
but the principle here, the question is that an expenditure? Are those travel and subsistence expenses expenditures? And I just wanted to point out, as we'd said in the legal comments, that that's a principle that really kind of goes, these are NAOs, but it goes back longer than the Puerto Rico Democrats. We said in 1980. That why we relied on expenditures, not contributions, I don't know. But we said in 1980 the NEA couldn't pay the direct subsistence expenses of delegates to the Democratic National Convention because the subsistence expenses of delegates are expenditures. We said three times in the mid-90s in response to requests from members of Congress who wanted to know if they could use their campaign accounts to pay their travel and subsistence expenses as convention delegates. We said, sure, that's fine. It's not really an office holder expense. It's not personal use. It's an expenditure. It's in connection with a federal election, and it's an expenditure. So we have been saying, really for about 30 years now, despite how this regulation, whether it's artfully drafted or not, we've been saying that travel and subsistence expenditures of national convention delegates are expenditures.
There's always a time to correct course.
Christian McGann.
Thanks. I'm not entirely sure it's 30 years, because I'm looking at the 2000-38 AO to the Democratic Party of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, which is, I would characterize as an odd fact pattern, because they don't really have partisan elections there, and they were asking about sending delegates to the National Convention. Did they have to report? Were they a political committee? Lots of issues there. But page 5, it actually talks about the regs, and it says, although the regulations do not specifically address the disbursements by a party committee for the expenses of a delegate at a National Convention, it appears from the definition of contribution and expenditure and the treatment of such spending with respect to delegates and delegates' committees that disbursements for the expenses of the delegates at the National Convention would be expenditures or in-kind contributions to the delegate. Thus, amounts received in response to solicitations stating that the funds would be used for the support of delegates at the National Nominating Convention would be contributions to the party. So this AO says the regulations don't specifically address it, which gives credence to what Commissioner Hunter's saying. So it's not really, the answer is not found in the reg. It's really a creature, it seems to be more of AOs. An AO that talks again about whether it's an in-kind to the delegate or whether the party asking for money to send that delegate is an in-kind to the delegate. It's still tied to the actual delegate's spending, whether the party picks it up or not. Certainly, when a delegate goes to the convention, they're there to vote for who they think or who they're bound to vote for to be the nominee for their party. But there's other things that happen at conventions, right? I mean, it's not solely federal. And one thing that I've always wondered is why was that never contemplated? For example, there's a variety of committees. Commissioner Hunter alluded to some of them. Before the call, you have maybe the contest committee, but then you also have a platform committee and a committee on rules and that sort of thing. And the platform applies to all candidates up and down the ticket, not just federal candidates. So it's a national convention, not a federal convention, merely because what folks who sit home and watch it on TV see is just the part where the delegates wave the signs and vote. There's a lot more that goes on, usually the week before the convention. No one ever wants to broadcast it because it's very dull and nuanced and talking about all sorts of things that really fascinate only a handful of people. But those things live on as a party, and I'm not sure that an audit to turn back on Commissioner Weintraub, her question about is audit really a place to overrule an AO? To me, is an audit really the place to expand the reach of an AO or make it essentially another rule that may live on? In this case, may not be an issue because they've made amendments, and maybe that resolves it. But I think the concern is there is a concern over here anyway that we are on the road to inadvertently federalizing things that are not necessarily federal. And although maybe the AO was correctly decided, maybe it wasn't. Maybe there's been subsequent developments that cast doubt on it. That's a whole other discussion. Regardless, to take that and sort of assume everything about national conventions, it's federal, I think there's language in the audit report that could be read that way going forward. And I think that is the short-term concern, trying to avoid a longer-term problem that some of us are not particularly comfortable with. So I think that's kind of where we are. I'm not sure it matters in this audit per se, because they've already done amendments, but it is going to matter down the road as to what you can and can't use hard money and soft money for, because after all, state and local conventions are non-federal. And I think that's true even if there's federal office holders there doing their thing, right? So it seems to me, why is the national convention not the same thing? That's a much larger issue than we're here to decide today. But I think there is significant activity at national conventions that show they're national, not simply federal. And I think the concern is we don't want to have an audit report create an even broader rule, which is the purpose of bringing this to the table. And I know we're 5 minutes over, and I apologize, but I thought it would help for when we bring this up again to know kind of where we are, so that way, you know, any paper we've drafted and proposed changes make a little more sense.
Thank you, and we will have to conclude, and we'll carry this matter over to the next meeting, and it sounds like there is ample further discussion that may need to be had about what happens at a national convention, because I think there's obviously some disagreement about what that means and what the regs mean and what the definition of contribution and expenditure mean. So we will look forward to that in 2 weeks. So we will adjourn meeting. Before we adjourn, Mr. Palmer, are there any administrative matters we need to attend to?
Madam Chair, there are none.
Thank you. We are adjourned.